to the Last Horror Podcast. My name's Christopher Brown. George A. Romero had been hawking around a fourth zombie script for a while, taking elements from Day of the Dead, his original script, and rejigging them with a view to say something about how he saw the world of the early noughties. He had apparently gone to Fox at one point, and their suggestion was that he give them the script and let them make it, but they wanted them to rename the title Night of the Living Dead. Romero refused, as he wanted to call the title, at the time, Dead Reckoning, which is the name of Land of the Dead's machine, the big monster truck. But it became clear that Fox really wanted the rights for the Night of the Living Dead franchise and an ability to be able to spin off different elements from it for their own, you know, zombie films, as it were. So Romero didn't do business with them. The film kind of had different titles, in fact, in the end. Twilight of the Dead, Dead Reckoning, and, of course, what they finally landed on, Land of the Dead, which was a decision after it being greenlit. But why, at this point, was somebody willing to give Romero all this money, $14 million, to make a new film? Well, that's relatively simple. Shaun of the Dead had shown in 2004, it looked quite cool, but the big one was more based around the fact that Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead, also called that, had made real bank in and shown that there was an appetite for zombie movies. So what better than bringing the man who invented the genre back to the fold, give him budget, and see what he can do. And what he did was this film, 2005's Land of the Dead.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The unburied dead are coming back to life, seeking human victims.
We don't know how many of them there are.
Do you think we'll be able to defeat these things?
We don't really know.
Nothing there, man.
They're communicating. They're thinking.
George A. Romero's Land of the Dead.
Zombies, man. Creep me out.
Okay, so filmed in Canada, making use of Canadian tax breaks, but really designed to be Pittsburgh once again. The film is a continuation of his original trilogy, the fourth installment, effectively making it not a trilogy, and focuses on a place called Fiddler's Green, which is kind of, due to money, has managed to lock itself away from the dangers of the world, a space for rich people to hide, haves and have-nots, a glorified version, perhaps, of the mall in Dawn of the Dead. Kind of a natural conclusion for that. It's run by a guy called, played by Dennis Hopper, called Paul Kaufman. And Kaufman effectively is quite ruthless as a leader in the group, and he keeps like the some people in relative poverty around Fiddler's Green, and then there's Fiddler's Green itself, and he creates a kind of, you know, bread and circuses, entertainments for the poor, while the rich kind of live in this very swish apartment building. One of the ways it's all been able to be maintained is by Riley, who has designed and uses a machine called Dead Reckoning, a big armored truck that is utilized to protect the perimeter of the space and bring supplies into the compound. And this seems to have worked reasonably well for a long period of time. Riley wants to leave, go up north to Canada where it's quiet. And as it's pointed out to him, there's nothing in Canada. And to which Riley replies, that sounds great to me. He teams up with Slack, who is Asia Argento, and some others to recapture Dead Reckoning after it is being stolen by a guy called Colo, played by John Leguizamo. And while that's going on, and he's trying to get the Dead Reckoning back, there's a far more serious threat happening. A group of zombies are becoming more intelligent and deciding that they want a piece of the action too, and are starting to storm Fiddler's Green. So Lands of the Dead is very much George A. Romero's big budget grand slam, the if you give me enough money, I will make a film. I think it unfortunately gets bundled in with the second trilogy of films, which seems harsh. My argument for as we move on through these last three of Romero's films is that Land of the Dead sits very much within the first trilogy. And then if you really want to spin out the other two, then we'll talk about those as A, from a narrative separate timeline, because they blatantly are. And B, because this fits far more naturally within Romero's other three films. Certainly, what are we looking at? We're looking at abuse of power, commercialization, and conflicts, internal conflicts, ignoring a wider threat. All of which sits very comfortably within the first trilogy. While everyone's arguing about Dead Reckoning, the real problem is starting to come around the corner, an uprising from the zombies, which are effectively now, in Romero's eyes at least, another class of creature in the world. They're no longer seen as a threat, mainly because they are part of the ecosystem that surrounds them. People flinch with Bub, let alone with Big Daddy, who is very much a very intelligent, you know, he's as much of a character in this as a lot of other people, and as such, it can feel a bit off-putting. But that evolution of zombie intelligence has grown over the years, and indeed, when we go straight back to the original moments of Night of the Living Dead, when, you know, what are these monsters, these ghouls, as they are called, in that the zombies are far more, you've got a guy, you know, trying to almost human-like in the cemetery, so it's not wildly different. It's not as much of a leap as possibly some people would have you believe. Land of the Dead is a film about how it's pretty clear. It's politics, certainly. It's very clear. Dennis Hopper's character is that affluent, grab it all, conservative character. And once again, Romero praises and almost fetishizes the blue collar worker who is just trying to get by. In this case, Riley, a man who is obviously intelligent and resourceful and able to get what he wants. Colo is a character who's also a man who gets what he wants, but his triggers aren't general greed, but feeling that he's being denied the opportunity to go up the ladder. That is almost certainly due to the racism of Dennis Hopper's character. This idea that he isn't good enough to get in the tower, when in actual fact the only thing that would make him good enough is money. So we've got a society of haves and have-nots that are deliberately kind of keeping people in the cultural and socioeconomic silos that they want to put them in. Then, obviously, you know, you could argue that zombies are a number of things. A nod to the commercialisation of the past in Dawn of the Dead, but also and consumerism, but also the possibility that maybe, you know, much like Day of the Dead, everyone argues and bickers all the time, and in this case about money and about, you know, dead reckoning, a supposedly mystical almost tool that will keep them all safe. But the reality for them is that this existential threat is not actually existential, you know, it's coming towards them. And that could sit as, you know, us all arguing about wars or Brexit or whatever it is, or, you know, when the real kind of threat of maybe climate change or terrorism is banging down the doors. It's worth pointing out, of course, that this is very much built at a time of, you know, 2005, we're in the middle of Bush's campaign, Bush's first term, the war on terror. Post 9/11 horror is very much a thing, and it's around about people being, you know, basically being punished and carved up with the splatter film-esque torture porn genre, which, you know, we won't go into a large argument about what torture porn is. And so it does feel kind of, you know, certainly a nod to how the rich are desperately trying to maintain their richness and their wealth while hiding away from the realities which are slowly creeping up on them. A lot of the arguments around dead reckoning and the threats that, you know, will blow you up are more around based around the idea that, you know, it's almost a, I want this thing, you know, the dead reckoning is almost a toy for the wealthy, built by the working man and then, you know, using the cash. And even when supplies are low, we can still pretend. Its most striking scenes are near the end when when Big Daddy, the zombie, brings his horde and they crash through and start to rip apart the wealthy in the Fiddler's Green's shopping mall halls. You know, the dirt and filth and blood and gore mixed with the shiny elitist surfaces of the shopping mall. There are elements in the film which allude to Romero's sense of humour, something that pops up again and again, the absurdities that he refuses to ignore, most notably the moment when Dennis Hopper laments having to kill one of his tenants in the tower block because he believes that you know, while he was trying to get away, that he had to, but then kind of rather sad face jovially kind of wink at the camera almost, that, oh, I didn't actually have to do that. Simon Baker does as good as he can with Riley as our hero, who is very much a Romero kind of Joe Bloggs everyman type character and not much to him. He just does the right thing all the time. More interesting, I think, is certainly Cholo, which is John Leguizamo's character, who with this very much is far more determined to exact a revenge and is driven by a mixture of indignant rage and you know, a willingness to kind of lash out. Dennis Hopper's pantomime villain isn't played too over the top, but does have elements of viciousness within him. And Asia Argento does what she can, but is still remarkably Azure Argentaresque in her acting at points, and struggles with who effectively is just a tough guy character, and not much else. As with a lot of Romero stuff, and you know, we talked last week about Romero kind of saying yes, you know, with the Dark Half, and indeed with Bruiser, him almost kind of saying, listen, you don't need to pay attention to why, you just need to look at this bit. You know, there is an element of that here. You know, there's no reason why our zombies are suddenly more intelligent. There's no reason why they're not paying, you know, not suddenly distracted by the fireworks. This evolution, which seems to be happening, is little more than a nod to a changing and evolving world, and humanity's, or at least very much Kaufman and all the rich characters' willingness to hide away from the world around them and ignore this evolution of the existential threats, and also of the reality that they now face. One of the enemy very much being literally at the gate. Romero as well very much nods towards the past. This film is designed as a celebration of his previous works and a collaboration with those that kind of have been influenced by him. Simon Baker deliberately said that he wanted to work with Romero on this film, and it was a great opportunity for him, so he agreed to it. Hopper saw you know, nods towards Easy Rider and Night of the Living Dead, coming from the same 1960s school of independent change and film, and was willing to work with him. There's cameos from Tom Savini, who obviously plays a zombified version of Blades from Dawn of the Dead. The original plan at the start of the film was to have clips from Night, Dawn and Day to kind of ground it within that body of work. But, you know, getting clips for that kind of stuff, I imagine, would be quite tricky because of all the different distribution rights. So he just nodded through that those films exist, but still grounds it within it. Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, who made Shaun of the Dead, a comedy nod towards Romero canon, appear in cameos. And this continues. Azure Argento, of course, was on set during some of the filming of Dawn of the Dead. Is you know, certainly was for Two Evil Eyes when Dario Argento came over to Pittsburgh to film his bit for that film. So it's very much a family kind of, you know, film with Romero at the center, able to make the movie finally, I think, that, you know, he wanted to make when he wrote that original grand action epic for Day of the Dead. Certainly when you put it in terms of some of the other films, zombie films that kind of led to this film being released, most notably Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, which is very very flashy, very violent, quite fun film, and 28 Days Later, which is Roddy Doyle's very stylized, digital filmed zombie, they're all affected with something or other, epic. They very much, these are, you know, films that are very much about the, you know, are influenced by the time, in particular, the ability to film cheap on digital film, and you know, big, brash action as well with Dawn. So Romero's version is very much couched within a slightly more traditional, you know, Romero, it feels like a Romero movie, with its nods towards violence and gore, and also with the you know, but with the social commentary and touches of comedy, it feels Romero-ish, and that's obviously great. It also feels quite fun. It's a fun, rompy movie, and I think when you look back on that original Day of the Dead script, you can imagine now exactly the kind of thing he was thinking of, and the kind of thing that he wanted to do. So, the film did okay at the box office. It was made for about $16 million, and it made $46 million internationally with $20 million in the US. It certainly wasn't a roaring success. And indeed, when Romero kind of went back and kind of said, "I'd like to make a sequel," there was less keenness. The movie was well received from a critical point of view, you know, getting middle to positive reviews, and I think the reviews very much were in favour of the fact that Romero wasn't, you know, just a slap bang gore merchant, but was actually using, you know, characters and situations to tell his story, and using the gore to kind of you know, punctuate and offer a bit of a punchline. Funnily enough, of course, that this is obviously, Land was the only film that he did that was a zombie film that was MPAA rated. So what he did to achieve that was kind of digitally impose other people on top of some of the gore shots and then remove them for an unrated version. I'm not sure how much that actually impacted on people's wish to kind of watch the film, you know, in the cinema, because they were, everything, certainly the horror fans were very aware that there was a gorier version coming. And the reality, of course, about that is that people do watch Romero films for the gore. You know, you don't want a kind of a neutered Romero. So from that point of view, maybe it wasn't quite as successful as it could have been. However, you know, they spent a lot of money on it. There's no way they couldn't have made this movie a R-rated film. Looking back at it, for me, and I think a lot of the time with Romero's stuff, and he kind of throws in lots of different elements and like half thoughts with some of the stuff, like with the elements of the fireworks, and you know, and obviously you never forget, you know, how much was the Ben decision in Night of the Living Dead a full on real decision, and how much was it just influenced and those Vietnam illusions and burnout, you know, how much of that was just coming naturally from him, you know. So when we look at the war machine of Dead Reckoning, the use of fireworks to distract it, like, you know, is that a nod towards the way that the military of America at that point was using shock and awe, or is that just an element that's in the back of Romero's mind? He throws lots of different touches and tastes in, and the film has lots of things that are happening all at the same time. So, you know, the bread and circuses elements in the, when we first meet Asia Argento's character, you know, is a mixture of quite obscene. You know, the zombies are, I mean, imagine the smell in there for starters, but the zombies are seen as a sideshow attraction that can be kind of ignored. When Romero was originally hawking around Twilight of the Dead, he kind of he imagined this was probably the 90s really, he spoke about a film where people would be stepping over the zombies like they were the homeless, and I think that dehumanization and that kind of allegory is also underpinned when you have people taking, you know, have your picture taken with the monster, and also the fact that these zombies can be distracted by fireworks and are seen as cattle to be herded away and to be kept away and ignored effectively. The great skill in Fiddler's Green for these characters is they have created a world where they are totally able to ignore the outside world and the problems within it. This is something that is alluded to in Dawn of the Dead, but not carried out. You can imagine, you know, that shopping mall being a cornerstone in a wider kind of hellish world, as these zombies seemingly are not going anywhere. They're still a problem, still a threat, and the ability to rebuild civilization seems almost impossible with them still out there, ready to bite, and the dangers these people face just to kind of keep the ship afloat, still trying to find various medication, supplies and food. It isn't surprising that Riley dreams not of a sanctuary, but just escape from everything. He wants to find a quiet place with his friends that he can set up some kind of community away from the commercialization, commoditization, and capitalism that seems to impregnate every element of Fiddler's Green. So with no Dead Reckoning 2 on the horizon, Romero had spoken about maybe doing a film that covered their trip to Canada as part of a continuation. There's an interesting line in the making of Doco. It's more like an EPK. It's not very good on the DVD or Blu-ray. Where Romero says that he first appeared to play at the $2 cash out game when he's betting, rather than like the big bucks. This is as far as he reaches in terms of big spend. And though he's frequently complaining that people wouldn't give him the money that he needed to make the films he wanted to make, when he does, it's interesting that his next step from there is to revert back to smaller, low-budget films. There's obviously a taste and an anticipation and a wish to watch more Romero-based movies. And as such, what he does is he has a new idea, a fresh concept in terms of how people are reacting online and how people are using film online, and runs with that with Diary of the Dead. So that's where we'll go next, is second to last movie. If you like Land of the Dead, I'd recommend kind of going back and looking at the comic book line he created with Marvel a few years before his death, Empire of the Dead, which very much feels in the same continuation of this world and of these type of themes of have and have nots, of people with weapons and aggression and a wish to kill, and also the growing belief that they will kind of take over, and different powers, and again the ideas of zombies being used as entertainment. Once again, the threat being commercialized, commoditized through our late capital, very, in this case, with a post-apocalypse world, very late capitalism. After the time spent in the wilderness in the 90s, it's good that Romero is given one last roll of the dice to prove his mettle. And what he does is create an interesting, thoughtful, fun action adventure horror movie which still stands amongst certainly the what we would call the trilogy as the fourth and equal installments that will, I think, over time be seen as a very positive film. While it certainly doesn't have the rough hone kind of edges and the some of the more exciting elements which kind of underpin the almost dangerousness of, say, Dawn. It's such a wild ride and so alien because it's so 70s, and it feels like a mainstream movie, but it's still so quintessentially Romero. And if you haven't seen it in a while, I would recommend going back and giving it another spin.
There's nothing there, man.
Legendary filmmaker George A. Romero brings you his ultimate masterpiece.
They're communicating. They're thinking.
Here they come!
George A. Romero's Land of the Dead.
Zombies, man. They creep me out.
Right, well, thanks very much for that. Next week, we go to Diary of the Dead, nearly the end of this process now, which is quite exciting, isn't it? And then we'll have announcements and new podcast challenges to face. If you want to get hold of me, please do. My email address is christopher@thelasthorrorpodcast.com. You can get me on Twitter @orange_monkey, or you go to the website, thelasthorrorpodcast.com. I have in the past said, listen, if you want to donate and keep the podcast going and blah, 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 I'd say that you can do that on the website. What I would say is I am currently running, or will be, well, not currently running, I am running in April 14th, the Mersey 10K, Mersey Tunnel 10K. So you run through under the Mersey, come out, finish in New Brighton. It's only 10 kilometres. It's the first time I've ever done anything like this. And one of the reasons the first time I've ever done like this, because I was far more into booze and fags as a young man. And now I have to look after myself a bit better. So I've started doing that. And this is an element to this. Anyway, long story short, don't give your money to me. If you want to donate to the podcast at all, donate to the my Just Giving page. The money's going to Northwest Cancer Research. To do that, go on my Twitter. It's the pinned link at the top of my Twitter page. There's a picture of me holding a massive goose. Long story. Go on that Twitter page, click on the link and donate some money. I'd put a really low target because I wasn't expecting anyone to donate any cash, but people have, which is lovely. So yeah, do that. That would be great. I'll let you all know when I've done it. And yeah, and that money there. And moving forward, this isn't the only fundraising thing I'll do. I think I'll do more over the next, you know, September and probably again this time next year as well. With the plan is for the distances to increase. Anyway, yeah, want to get hold of me, please do. Any feedback, any opinions, we are going to be doing the Video Nasties podcast is coming. Season 2 is coming soon, in and out of a month's time. So we'll start talking about that very soon. If you want to get involved with that, let your friends know. Back to that well. If you want to contact me about anything, or indeed, as I said, if you want to donate some money to charity to help research cancer research, then that would also be great. So, until next week when we talk about Diary of the Dead, take care and I'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.